That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Lepondre looking to get close side of Font. Lepondre away from David. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello and welcome to the Empire Rules podcast supported by Blue Collar Street Food. I'm Alex, your host. I'm joined today by Hugh and Dan to discuss the 2-1 loss at Blackburn. You can see I've got used to us losing 1-0, Hugh, so you'll have to forgive my early error there. But yeah, 2-1 against Blackburn. How are you doing today?
Yeah, not too bad. Watched the game on iFollow yesterday. I feel sorry for anyone who made that long journey up, though you did get to see more shots on target than I think our previous three matches combined. So that's at least something.
You got to take these positives where you can find them. And Dan, how are you doing this morning?
Yeah, I'm all good, thanks. Yeah, I also watched on iFollow yesterday. And again, admiration goes out to anyone who made that trip.
I will admit, we did try to get somebody who went to the game to come on, but there was only 280 of them. So it's a little bit of a struggle, in all honesty.
Yeah, with the train strikes, they're probably still on their way back. But yeah, as you said, there are a couple of positives to take, but certainly not getting carried away. And another away loss, I think now we've won once in the last 14 on the road. So it's, yeah, quite miserable.
That's a delightful statistic to start the podcast off with. it's not good away form whatsoever. Let's get into the good, the bad and the injured. So obviously from the weekend, we lost Scott Dan and Andy Yeardom, I think, came off at halftime against Millwall as well. And then going into yesterday, we also lost Andy Carroll, who was out with abdominal pain, apparently, according to Sue Paul Ince. Whether he comes back in for the weekend or not is anyone's guess, really, I think, at the minute, Hugh.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to read too much into abdominal pain because it's not like, I guess, a usual football injury you hear, like a kind of thigh strain or a hamstring injury, something like that. So I guess we'll have to see. But I thought we played better without Carroll, personally. I like seeing Lucas Shaw up top. I think I was listening to the Reading Between the Lines podcast and they were saying that it's an absolute kind of war crime in the Championship to not be starting a 20-goal-a-season striker when he's fit in Lucas Shaw.
Yeah, we'll come on to the starting lineup, but it feels like the first time we've seen Lucas Shaw in about 6 years. So it was nice to see him starting up front. And then, so we'll go on to the good and the bad as well. Dan, the good from yesterday, there was bits of it, wasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. There were a few glimpses of hope. My main one is Cassidy. For me, he has to start going forward. He looked really creative yesterday and looked the class above pretty much everything we've had in midfield for most of the season. I would have liked him to see him play with Fauna, but obviously not the case. A quick stat for you, he had 4 shots yesterday, 3 on target. No Reading player this season has had more than 3 shots on target in one game. So that alone is a big positive. And I hope that he's done enough last night for Ince to really kind of put his faith in him and start him going forward.
Yeah, 4 shots on target in one game. So more than most Reading matches in total, in all honesty, from just one player. Yeah, I agree. I think he was really quite positive last night, and seeing him play behind a striker who likes the ball into his feet is only gonna help him, really. Hugh, what about the bad?
Oh, the bad, the defending, for sure. And also, I think going back to what Dan was saying on the kind of chances created, 4 shots on target isn't that many, really. I mean, it was more than we've had in recent weeks, but it's almost like because it's been so bad lately, we look at a game where we've had, because you look at Cassidy's shots, there's one from miles out, which spun all over the place, which would have won goal of the season. There's one that kind of trickled towards the keeper he should have done better with, and then the goal as well, like you said, and I think Long had a header that the keeper saved well, but that should be your average match. In fact, that's a game where you haven't really created that much if you're reduced to just a couple of long shots and a header in the box. So it's progress, but only because where we were before is so, so bad. And then the defending, they, Paul Ince seemed to think after a game it was a close game we should have drawn. Before, and I know we'll get on to kind of how the game went, but before we equalised, Blackburn could have been 3 or 4 ahead. They had so many good chances, whether it was Gallagher hitting them over the bar or Lumley making a great double save. I think the defence was very open yesterday.
I definitely think it's a point around the fact is, yesterday was progress, right? As you say here, it was progress in terms of going forwards. It was better, but ultimately, it was still miles and miles and miles below what you would want to see, I think. And it's only progress because of the fact that the bar was so low to begin with. So, you know, although I think we can praise yesterday for being better, it's we have to put it into the context of where we were previously in the last 4 or 5 away games where we weren't even shooting at all. So there is a little bit of, you know, context to be taken with this praise, which might come in this podcast, I think. Let's go on to the lineup yesterday. We made 4 changes to the lineup, and Lucas Joao started up front, as we've discussed. Cassidy came in, and I want to say it was Mbengue who came in as well, and Loom. I can't remember every change, but there was 4 changes in total. The main one obviously being Lucas Joao playing up front on his own, Dan. And it looked as well with that, we were kind of forced to go 4 at the back because of Scott Dan's injury.
Yeah, 4 at the back is quite an interesting one. Like, I don't want to spend too much time on Scott Dan, but in my opinion, I'd be happy if he stays injured for the rest of the season. I think his time is up. But 4 in the back is absolutely fine for me. I think Ince just kind of needed to switch it up, or just in general, so I'm happy to just see changes here. And I think we did see some positives from it. I'm not sure how much of an impact it actually made, 4 or 5 at the back. It still wasn't great. But the Carroll and Joao thing is quite interesting because I've seen quite a lot of comments on Twitter and things about Carroll and how it's probably a good thing that Joao's getting a start. I don't disagree with that at all. But I think Carroll has arguably been our best player this season. And I know we've mentioned the bar is quite low. He scored 6 goals in the league. I think only McBurney has won more aerial duels than him. So it feels a bit weird for me to be excited about Joao starting when I think Carroll's been our best player. I mean, you can add Tom Ince to that argument.
I think a lot of that, Dan, comes down to the fact that obviously with Andy Carroll, the style is basically dictated by the fact he's on the field, right?
Yeah.
So he's involved a lot when he's on the field.
Yeah. And to be fair, if you look at that aerial duel stat I just mentioned, he's probably getting lumped the ball 20 times a match. So you'd hope he wins 10. And that all adds up. But yeah, again, like going back to Joao and my point on Ince having to switch it up, like this is exactly what he should be doing. I mean, obviously, Carroll's injured, so he didn't really have much choice there. But yeah, as you mentioned, 20 goals. Well, he could be a 20 goals a season striker. We've got to give him a go, surely, in this dogfight. He's got a proven record. Get him on. I mean, he didn't score yesterday, but I certainly wouldn't say it was a downgrade on anything we've seen in any of the previous games.
Yeah, I think I agree. When you look at the fact that he's our 2nd highest scorer of the season, he's on 5. Carroll's on 6. He's on 5. But how many minutes has Lucas Joao played? It's not a lot, is it? Realistically, if Carroll had had all the minutes that Lucas Joao had played this season, would I back Lucas Joao to be on 10, 11, 12 goals? Probably, I think. So it's frustrating to see him sit on the bench every week, but thankfully, yesterday, you know, obviously got the start. And
I think one thing on the lineup as well is it highlighted again Ince's reluctance to go with academy players. He could have stuck with the 5 at the back if he went for a Brefer at right wing back and then Guinness Walker at left wing back. And he could have, if with the 4-3-3 as well, he had a natural left winger on the bench in Femi Azeez, but he stuck Shane Long out there in a kind of square peg round hole role that just hasn't worked. I know Long had one of the best chances of the game, but other than that, there was no creativity down the left wing and there was absolutely kind of zero link-up play between McIntyre and Long the whole game.
Yeah, you're basically, you're playing as, I want to say centre-back in McIntyre. You're basically playing a centre-back at left-back, which we know doesn't really work, having seen McIntyre play there, and Shane Long on left wing, which doesn't really work because we've seen that as well. But let's get into the game. I think Reading started positively for the first 60 seconds, Hugh. Is that, that's fair, isn't it? Like, we had a shot.
I had to rewatch the highlights because I was having my dinner, and so I only switched on the stream about 2.5 minutes in, and I picked up my phone to see a text saying, great, we're already 1-0 down from one of my mates. So that was fantastic. And yeah, watching it back, we win the corner, and then we seem to have this thing in the last few games, because it happened one of the goals up at Middlesbrough as well, where we have a corner and we concede from it because someone takes a heavy touch or makes an error in the middle of the park. And it just seems kind of completely at odds with Ince's kind of very much, we play defensive, we set up to not concede, to really have almost everyone up there for corners. We seem to lose the ball on the halfway line, and all of a sudden Blackburn have 3 or 4 players in our half, and either Tom Holmes isn't going full pelt or he is not the quickest man out there, because watching the highlights back, it looks like he's kind of jogging while 3 Blackburn players are absolutely kind of outpacing him into our half. And then, I mean, Brereton Diaz will be in the Premier League next season, whether it's with Blackburn or someone else. His contract's up this summer. He is a good striker. To where?
He's moving to Spain. I think he signed a contract with, I want to say, Villarreal.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So he will not be in the Premier League next season. He'll be in La Liga. But he is a top striker at this level. You can't, when you play a team like Blackburn and the ball falls to someone like him, you don't get away with the catalogue of mistakes, to throw up the cliches that Reading made in that move.
Yeah. And the thing about being so defensive 80-90% of the game is you do have to then try and take advantage of these set pieces. So I understand the want and the desire to push men forwards, Dan, but we left ourselves so open at the back. Tom Holmes takes 2 steps forward, and admittedly, Tom Holmes's touch or pass, or I'm not really sure what it was meant to be, but whatever he does here, it falls straight to a Blackburn player, and he's completely like at sea at that point, Tom Holmes. And I think it's in Bengue, he's just left completely, you know, 3-on-1, he's got very, very little chance. And although he gets his foot on the ball, when he tries to block the pass, it just falls straight into Brereton Diaz's path.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we just set up all wrong at that corner, which, as you said, it's really annoying because it was looking positive. I was like, we've got a corner already. We're looking okay. I mean, albeit 60 seconds in or whatever it was. But then, yeah, Tom Holmes makes the bad touch. I wanted to make a point on that, actually. Like, quite a few bad touches, particularly around the defence. And I'm just starting to think, like, in the position that we're in, I know it's been our game plan for a little while now to kind of play it around the back, but it has to come to an end soon if we keep giving away these silly goals. I know there was another one where Lumley got caught and managed to sort of clear it, but it bounced off one of the strikers and hit the post. Got super lucky there. But we just can't keep giving away these silly goals. Another stat I had was there's only one team out of the relegation zone that has a worse goal difference than us in the whole league. I think that's QPR. And I didn't really want to speak about the 6-point possible deduction already, but if we are to get that, the goal difference is a real worry. And it's certainly not helped by sort of messing around at the back and making these mistakes with bad touches and things. It's just basic football. We need to be much better at that.
Yeah, I agree. Like, ultimately, we can complain about Ince's tactics, but actually, the quality of the players are not fantastic as well. So It's a bit of both, unfortunately, when it comes to that kind of thing. Tom Holmes, let's discuss Tom Holmes. I thought yesterday Tom Holmes was not good. And I think he hasn't been good for the best part of probably a month now since he's come back from injury. Dan, do you think he's been... I don't want to say rushed back, because he has been back for maybe a month, but he looks almost a different player to what we saw, I think, in the first half of the season.
Yeah, I think Holmes is a bit of a weird one. As you said, like, it's hard to tell whether he is slow or unfit when he's tracking back there. which could kind of play into your argument that maybe he was rushed back a bit and he's not 100%, but we are relatively desperate at the back, so he just makes it in by default. But you're right, like he does seem to have dropped off form-wise. But then again, I feel like almost everyone has. So I wouldn't want to be too harsh on him specifically.
There is always the option here, of course, that Liam Moore could start.
God, do I have to answer? It's a tough one because some people have been saying, I saw someone tweet saying, oh, Liam Moore's looked really good in the minutes he's played so far. I thought, well, he's only played 45 minutes in a game that Millwall didn't need to score a second in. And what was it, about 5 minutes at the end against Sheffield United? Moore can play. I mean, if he starts against Hull and he does well, then fantastic. We are kind of getting down to being close to the bare bones in terms of defenders, because obviously, like we said, you've got Dan out, you've got Yeardom out, you've got Hutchinson's probably never going to return in a Reading shirt at this point. So I guess kind of why not give him a go? And if, especially because the games are coming thick and fast at the moment, with Holmes coming back from injury. I wonder as well with Holmes, is it the fact maybe he's one of those defenders who's been more comfortable in a back three as opposed to a centre-back pairing? Because they didn't look familiar with each other, Saar and Holmes, yesterday. And they kind of, I think a lot of our centre-backs like to progress the ball into midfield. Like they like to take those steps forward, which is something when you're in a back three is a lot easier to do because you know you've got two people behind you to cover that space. Then occasionally there were moments, I think Holmes had pushed into midfield and at one point Loom played an absolute hospital pass to Saar that ended up with Blackburn nearly scoring. So I just feel when you're chopping and changing the centre-backs a lot, it's hard to get into that rhythm that earlier in the season we did have when you had that consistent back three of McIntyre, Hutchinson and Holmes.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're going to move to a two and you've got somebody like Tom Holmes, who he does seem to be very comfortable in a back three, whether he can, you know, produce the same performances as a back two is probably still to be seen, right? So we'll see if he starts on Saturday. I would assume he will, but whether he can put in a performance which is, you know, a little bit more reminiscent of what we saw earlier in the season. We'll move on later in the first half. I think it was 20-ish minutes, 21 minutes, 22 minutes. Reading Cesar Cassidy, 22 minutes. I think it was outside the box, but it all counts, right? And it was a fairly easy, comfortable save for the keeper. We won't touch on it too much because it was actually a fairly routine stop. But the rest of the first half, Dan, Reading were okay, I think, in the first half. It wasn't great, but I think we were okay. But it was all kind of like mirrored by the fact that we were 1-0 down, so Blackburn didn't need to do too much.
Yeah, I think so. We didn't really make them do or even step out of their comfort zone, really. But as we mentioned already, it's a low bar at the moment for Reading. And I think you can look at that first half and take away positives. Blackburn did have a few chances, which, yeah, Lumley made some good saves. And bar the kind of messing around at the back, I thought it was all right defensively. I don't know, actually, I'm probably clutching at straws there trying to get some sort of positives to give you. But yeah, the first shot on target, we kind of joke about it being an easy one, but an easy one is better than none, and that is exactly what we've been getting for the last couple of weeks. So I was happy to see it I wasn't happy to see it saved, of course, but happy to see it hit the target.
Yeah, I think it was one of those where if it had happened at the Medeski, just having that shot on target would have really got the fans in Club 1871 going. But because it's only 200 people on a cold Wednesday night at Blackburn, it probably didn't make too much of a difference.
Yeah, it's one of those shots where it can boost the crowd if you've got a crowd, but unfortunately there is no crowd at Blackburn on a Wednesday night. I think it was 280, as you say. The first half, I don't think there was that much in the way of big chances for either side particularly. I think Joe Lumley did make a couple of fairly routine saves in the first half. one moment we didn't, well, one moment I was going to touch on, which I've completely kind of missed on, Joe Lumley for the goal. Hugh, I feel like Joe Lumley gets beaten a lot from distance.
It does. I think it's one we've touched on previous episodes where he's not someone who's going to make these great saves. I remember kind of Raphael had fling himself across the goal sometimes and make the Sky Sports saves as their referred ones that look good for cameras. But Lumley just doesn't do that. And you do wonder, is he unsighted? What's happened that's meant he's kind of not the kind of keeper who gets down quick enough? But I think this is just his level. You have to accept, I think, that we needed a keeper in the summer, and Lumley is going to let those kind of shots in occasionally. He's not going to be consistent from distance. I think one moment we haven't touched on as well with Lumley is the near horror show where he goes to clear it in the first half and it bounces off. Is it Sammy Smodic who was running through and comes back off the post and thankfully into his hands, because that would have been an absolute clangor and wouldn't have done his confidence any good if that had trickled into the bottom corner.
Yeah, it's one where Lumley's been caught out a few times like that, I think, but he's kind of got away with it this season. That's the first one where it's really, you know, been potentially disastrous, but I think he got away with that one. But as Dan said earlier on, if we're going to play it back to the keeper and play it out from the back out into the defence like that, which we do from time to time, although we do knock it long most of the time, we have, you know, been seeing us play it to the defence to be able to just hit it long to Carroll. You are going to get pressured by some teams, so I think Lumley probably got away with one there yesterday. The start of the second half, Dan, I think the start of the second half, Blackburn came out pretty quick. The first 10 minutes or so, Blackburn were kind of all over us. And I think Lumley made two saves early on in the second half. And they had three or four corners in the space of 30 seconds. And it felt like we were kind of on a hiding to nothing there at the start of the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, as you said, for like 10, 15 minutes-ish, I was quite worried. But again, I guess you could turn that into a positive that we did weather the storm a little bit until we did equalise. So that is something to take. But yeah, Blackburn's pressure was quite relentless. And I guess trying to turn it into a positive again, Reading do usually crumble under big pressure. I mean, albeit it's usually 80 plus minutes where they crumble. And we're talking 45 to 55 here. But yeah, I thought we did handle it well. And then, obviously, it gets a little bit better in the second half.
Yeah, we started to put some pressure on, I think. Probably about, 55 minutes in? I think the tide started to turn a little bit. 55, 56 minutes in. I think we had a... I think Joe Lumley makes a double save, Dan. Pretty quickly, the ball goes up the other end. And I think this is probably 65 minutes. He makes a double save and then we go up the other end and we score within maybe 2 minutes after that. So it felt like that was going to be a very big kind of couple of minutes there.
Yeah, for sure. And like just looking at the goal, like I know we've already talked about Carroll, but you see Reading for that goal play some nice football. The sort of interchange with Cassidy, I can't actually remember who lays him off. But it's fast flowing, it's quick passing. And it worked nicely. I mean, I know he's had a long shot and maybe has got a bit lucky, but I think the build-up like was well deserving of the goal. And it was a real bit of light in the match. And I was like, wow, Reading can actually play football going forward, because I don't think I've really seen them put together a piece like that for a while.
There was creative play that didn't even slightly involve Tom Ince as well, who is apparently our only creative player in the entire team. No, it was Zhao. He did a kind of little flick on to Caste. It was like a 1-2 where he just almost let it roll under his foot. And the strike from Caste is absolutely brilliant at that point. Absolutely levers it into the corner. And it makes you wonder, why on earth has he been sat on the bench, especially when in his exact box-to-box role, we've been starting Tom McIntyre for the last few weeks. It really does not make any sense.
Well, the one thing that some of the Chelsea fans said when he signed is he either scores, you know, headers or absolute worldies. And you know, yes, they might not quite fall into the absolute world he can, but it was certainly a good long range strike for his first professional goal. And, you know, he's what, I think he's 18, maybe 19 at this point, but he's still a teenager. And you can't really understand why we wouldn't play him. And going forwards, he should be getting a lot of minutes for the rest of the season, right, Dan?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the Ince point, Tom Ince I'm talking about here, is an interesting one because it takes the pressure off him a little bit if you do have another creative outlet in the team. And I think, not to be too harsh on Tom Ince, but I think he's got a lot of praise purely because he is or has been the only one doing anything going forward. But when you've got Cassidy there on the bench and now, well, playing this week, you just have to look at the game and see he offers something else going forward. And you'd imagine that will only work wonders for Tom Ince. In the fact that, yeah, he'll have way less pressure on him. He won't have to do everything. And hopefully Reading can have more shots and, well, yeah, hopefully more goals.
Which is, let's be honest, if some of the pressure comes off Tom Ince, it can only be a good thing because the fact is Tom Ince hasn't been good now for a while. I know he's probably been our best player this season, but he hasn't been a consistent performer, I don't think, for a good while. And the attitude thing is definitely starting to rub off on people now as well, now that his performance is dropping.
He looked very frustrated again last night, didn't he? One moment that stood out to me in the first half was Tom Holmes pinged a crossfield pass towards him and it bounced on the pitch. So a kind of a Lionel Messi would have brought it down. There are some championship players who would definitely put a foot on the ball, but Ince almost looked as if, as the ball was coming over, oh, I'm not going to go for that. And then the moment it went out for the throw and he threw his arms in the air, kind of berated Tom Holmes. I was watching it thinking, well, you could have stuck a leg out and possibly kept it in play, but your go-to is just, nope, the ball didn't land exactly where I needed it, so I'm just going to slam my teammates again. And it can't be easy. I know I've said this before, but it can't be easy for the players getting it in one ear from Paul Ince and probably getting it in the other ear from Tom Ince the whole time. And it does make you wonder, it's part of the reason we've regressed a bit, because some players do down tools after a while and are just a bit sick of hearing it from Tom Ince, especially because, like you said, I think his last good game was probably the Blackpool game, and it's easy for him to be the only creative player on the pitch when the other three midfielders are all more defensive-minded and the only other forward is Andy Carroll and you're playing a back five. So a lot of the time, he's the only creative player on the pitch because that's the lineup that Paul Ince has chosen.
Yeah, it's very very much kind of a catch-22 situation, right? If you only put one creative player on the field, then ultimately they're going to be the most creative player. I agree in terms of his attitude. Like, it's got to be very difficult to play alongside somebody who constantly berates you when something goes wrong. I mean, I'm sure the squad get along with him just fine, but it can't be easy, especially when things aren't going well. So, you know, if you're going to have an attitude like that, you do have to ultimately have the performances to back it up. And I don't think he has in the last couple of months, really. We made a couple of subs just about 10 minutes to go. Aziz Abrifa and Iha Bishaman came on. I was a little surprised we made three subs, in all honesty, because it felt like between us scoring and up until the subs, really, the game was quite even, I think, Dan.
Yeah, I think so. I was also surprised to see subs. I thought just keep going the way we're going, and we looked all right. But then I can hear me from probably a few months ago, and the hate I was giving Paul Ince for not making any subs. So I don't want to be too harsh on him for rolling the dice and bringing those three on.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one because you either play 90 minutes of Shane Long and Lucas Zhao, and I think it was who was the last player to come off, Mbengue. So you either give them all 90 minutes and you don't make any subs because things are going well, and then we concede late and people have a go at you, or you make subs and kind of what happened yesterday happens. And Reading kind of just went into their shell, I think, once we made these subs, Dan. And it really, Blackburn had three or four good opportunities to score, I think, after the subs, before they actually scored. which makes Paul Ince's comments after of it being a close game and, you know, we deserved a point. It just doesn't, I don't think it really rings true, because it just the way that the game played out after those subs, the last 10 minutes, Blackburn were all over us.
Yeah, it wasn't a surprise at all when they did finally score. You're right, that they had a couple of good chances. They probably could have got a couple in those last 10 minutes. And yeah, I agree with you. I think Ince's comments after about we should have got a draw is definitely clutching at straws a bit. I think, yeah, as you said, but the pressure they were putting on in the last sort of 10 minutes, that they were always going to score. And it is the Reading way, right? As soon as it gets past 80 and it's a draw, you can bet that we're going to concede. And it proved right again.
At the very least, we're going to go back into our shell, aren't we? And just try and pull out the point, yeah. Which yesterday, arguably, it wasn't the worst idea away at Blackburn, but it didn't work, Hugh, because we conceded on the 82nd minute. And
yeah.
The ball kind of just...
Sorry, I was just going to say as well, I think the issue with taking Zhao off is that you lose that out ball. I think with Kelvin he looked a bit like a boy playing men's football. At this stage, he might go on to be a great player. He's definitely got the potential there from what people have seen in the under-23s, but taking him off just meant that wave after wave of pressure was coming, because every time we went long, the ball just comes straight back at you within seconds if you don't have that player like a Zhao or a Carroll who can bring it down to their feet and then look for the kind of sideways pass. Instead, it's getting headed kind of 30 yards back towards your box immediately.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to when we were playing Clark up front last year. It always felt like a bit of a, I don't want to call it last option, but it never felt like we were actually going to be able to score with up front, unless something kind of magical happened. It wasn't a case if we looked like really creative and really a threat. And I think you're right. I think he looks just a bit kind of out of place still at the moment in Championship football. And it's, you just end up with the ball coming back to you, as you say. It's their second goal, Reading are trying to clear the ball. It gets to about the halfway line and Tom Ince kind of pokes the ball away from a Blackburn player, but it falls pretty much straight back to, I think it's the left back, who plays it into the edge of the area. And admittedly, I think this is it's a nice little through ball into the area, but the defence has just been caught out completely down, I think, for this goal. The back heel just completely falls. I think it's Naby Sarr and Tom Holmes, and neither of them spot the runner until he's already gone.
Yeah, I don't know if it was tiredness or what, but it was quite lax from the defence. And you're right, the back heel was lovely. I mean, I'd be raving about it if it was up the other end, but I think they should have been alert to that. It was very slow. The runner is free. It's just poor all round, really.
Yeah, it's Sam Gallagher as well with the back heel, which is really disappointing because Sam Gallagher is not a particularly good forward. Yeah, I think it's just very slow reactions from all of them. And it's a neat finish from Ryan Hedges, but it's just one of those goals where you look at it and you think everything just seems to fall apart a little bit, Hugh. I can't sit there and be like, oh, this has gone wrong and that's gone wrong. It just feels like Blackburn have just kind of like cut through us, you know, so easily without really any particular effort.
But like you said, they were getting quite a few chances before that as well. And yeah, it just seemed like everyone switched off for a moment. Sarr should definitely do better with the back heel because it almost seemed to go under his foot, or like there was a second delay on him getting a toe to the ball, but it rolls through easily. I think Tom McIntyre's trying to close down Hedges, but he just gets the absolute run on him. And in those kind of situations, you'd be very disappointed in a forward or a midfielder not finishing from there. So I don't think we can blame Lumley on that one. But it's what happens if you sit back and defend, you're going to concede these kind of chances eventually if you're not a great defensive side, which we're not. We put a lot of players on the kind of edge of the box, but that doesn't make us actually good defensively.
Is it most goals conceded in the league at this point? Maybe second after QPR at this point, but
it's going to be close.
It's got to be up there, right? Yeah, you can't claim to be a good defensive side if you've got the worst defensive record in the league, unfortunately. That just isn't quite how it works. obviously temper's kind of frayed over, Dan, because Loom managed to get himself sent off just after the red card as well with what is a pretty stupid reaction, especially after he's just won a free kick.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, he's an absolute idiot. He's won the free kick. He's got enough experience to know it's late on. The game's pretty much gone. You just don't react like that. We've got plenty of issues already with injuries and suspensions. Like, we're not blessed with millions of options, and Loom has probably started every game he's been available for. So now for him to be out for a couple of games at least, it's just horrible. It's horrific for Inter. And as much as I do disagree with a lot of his decisions, like, Loom has been a staple for him, and there isn't really anyone else to take his position, but now we're going to have to fill that, and it's just not what you want to see at the end of the game.
It feels like Ince is getting forced into making more and more decisions which he doesn't necessarily want to have to make it either. I think if Loom was there, he would play him, and now Loom's not there, he's going to have to try and work around it. So it feels like maybe that means that Cassidy is going to have to start in midfield again, because ultimately, we don't have enough midfielders otherwise. It means Fauna might have to come back in if he's available. It feels like Ince's hand kind of gets forced by these kind of stupid decisions. And he, I think that gives Loom the second worst disciplinary record now in the Championship. But
who's I've got
Kamara at Watford has had two red cards.
Okay.
He slightly beats him out. But do you know who has the third worst record in the Championship?
It's not. Well, it can't be Sam Hutchinson, can it? Even though he was booking.
But you are close with it being a Reading player.
Who is it?
Andy Yeardon.
Oh, that's surprising.
11 yellow cards, which is the same as Loom.
Yeah. I mean, it was just idiotic, wasn't it? Like Dan was saying, 85th minute, just get into full time. Like, and what do you expect on the halfway line as well, when everyone's pushing forward? Of course the striker's going to clip your heels. That's what they do. They want to break up the play. So to react like that is just stupid. And he won't play again now till what, Easter Monday, because of the international break. So he misses three games that really we should be looking to get points in as well. He's going to be missing Hull this weekend. And then we play Bristol City. And I think it's either Birmingham or Preston on the Friday. So those are games that we're not playing Burnley or top opposition. They're games we should be looking to get points. And frustratingly, Loom was all right yesterday, I thought. I know he gave the ball away in one moment, but he really broke up a lot of attacks for Blackburn in the middle of the park. And his passing was okay, other than that one sloppy pass to Sarr, I thought, yesterday. It was one of his better games. And like you said, it will probably mean Tom McIntyre ends up in midfield or something like that in the next few games, which no one wants to see, really.
I think, yeah, the frustrating thing is, however poor you might think Loom is, ultimately he's in the team because the options behind him are not any better, right, Dan?
Yeah, definitely. And Hugh's right. We'll probably end up seeing McIntyre in there or another defender or someone who doesn't play in central midfield forced into that role, which just does no one any favours. So it's just really disappointing. And yeah, as we've all mentioned, like we don't have that much choice. And you know, we need to pick up some points in these final few games. I think there's 9 games left, but we will need to pick up points. And if we don't have our best players to pick from, then that only gets harder.
Yeah, I know what you're trying to say there, Dan. I wouldn't class Loom as one of our best players, but I get your point. Yeah.
I do agree. He's definitely not one of our best players, but there arguably is anyone better in that position. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, got you. Let's go on to some fan questions, because Reading didn't manage to create a chance after the red card. So we've got a few questions people have sent in. As ever, if you've got any questions for us at the end of these podcasts, send us in your, you know, thoughts, comments, questions on social media or on WhatsApp. Lyle's question, Hugh, is the international break the last chance to change manager this season? Because at the minute we're sleepwalking towards relegation.
I mean, Yes, in the sense that the games come very thick and fast after the international break. So it's almost like, even though it's not Saturday, Tuesday, because of the Easter weekend, it's like going Saturday, Tuesday all the way up until the 22nd of April. So you wouldn't want to change manager in that kind of space. You would have to act after the whole game. I've seen some people tweeting, oh, they reckon that he will get sacked after Hull if we don't get a result. But I imagine that's only based on kind of the thoughts in their head that they want him sacked after the whole game. I genuinely don't know what you do at this point, because I think we touched on it after the Cardiff game. The last thing I want to see is us bringing a manager right now, almost kind of Paul Clement-esque, like we did in that Stam season, where they get us over the line, and then by October next season, November next season, we go, actually, this manager is crap, and we only got him because he was someone available to get us over the line last season. Then we're just in, because it has been ever since the Stam season, where we nearly went down. I think Burton Albion, Sunderland went down that season. It has been a painful cycle of just new manager in December, January, whenever, sacked the next season because we realise they're not actually good enough. And we can't go back to that. Now that we've actually invested in the behind-the-scenes structure, this is exactly the job that Bowen, Carey and a lot of them have been brought in to do. They need to make a decision, and for it to be the right decision, because we're not back in the kind of 90s, 80s, even early noughties, where it was kind of like Koppel did everything on the pitch and was allowed whatever, and even influencing transfers. We're at a point now where the coach is simply a head coach. So that appointment has to be made by Bowen, and it has to be the right choice. And I just worry if you pull that trigger, I just feel, if you sack Ince, the option for me is Noel Hunt till the end of the season, just because it might be a more positive voice, because the negativity around Ince right now is so much that it just seems after every game, whether it's the nonsense he comes out with or it's the doing down of individual players, potentially just giving it to Noel Hunt till the summer might just give them the boost they need to pick up, say, 3 or 4 wins out of the remaining 9 games.
Dan, do you think a change is a positive and would give us that kind of boost? And if so, is Noel Hunt the only kind of option?
Yeah, it's interesting you went for Noel Hunt, and I definitely don't disagree. And I was going along similar lines of maybe Murty or McEnough. But again, on the premise that they take over these 9 games and we probably look for a more long-term option at the end of the season. The international break is probably the last chance to do it, but at the same time, it's quite a good opportunity to do it if that is what Bowen decides. But yeah, I'd be pretty happy with Noel Hunt. I'd be happy with Merton McEnough. Someone positive come in that the fans already love, that have loads of passion and a fresh face. I think it will work. I mean, the passion thing is the biggest one. I'm not saying Paul Ince isn't passionate. You can see it on the sidelines that he is giving what he has. But I just think, as Hugh touched upon, his post-match interviews are really pushing the fans away at this point. And I think he's probably lost 80%, if not more, of the fan base now.
My issue with any of these guys coming in, so any of the ones you mentioned, Dan, is it just has a very Alan Shearer-esque feel to it. When Newcastle got relegated from the Premier League all those years ago, you bring in a manager who's got the fan connection, he comes in, and then you get relegated anyway, and you've pretty much ruined any chance of them having like any managerial career. I do think the issue is, of course, is that I do think if you are going to make a change, and if we do make a change, the only realistic option is probably to do Noel Hunt, because he's already employed by the club. And you can say it's an interim thing until the summer, and then we're going to review and we'll decide in the summer what's going to happen. But it almost feels like we've kind of left it too late, I think, based on what you said, Hugh, with the fact that we've previously, when we've changed managers, it's been January, February, December. And now we're at the point where there's only 9 games left, and you want to make the right choice going forwards in the future. But to do that, you probably need to get to the end of the season, because we can't make the right choice if we don't know what division we're in. So it almost feels like we're either forced to stick with Paul Ince now until the end of the season, which I think lots of fans, as Dan said, don't want, or to go with Noel Hunt as kind of this interim option, which, again, is Noel Hunt going to want that? Is the club going to want that? I think they've put themselves in a really kind of like awkward situation at this point.
I do think that it was this exact point in the Stam season that we got rid of Stam and brought in Clement, because if I remember rightly, he only had 8 games and he won 2 of them. And I think if you look at it just on a purely points basis, if we do get the -6, this is, we're 3 points above Blackpool, but they are, I know they absolutely slaughtered QPR the other night, but if we can pick up 2 or 3 wins, and then you're playing it of, will Paul Ince get us another 2 or 3 wins? Could just the positivity in the ground even around getting rid of Ince and just simply saying, Noel Hunt is our manager till the summer? Because like you were saying, Alex, I do disagree with Murty in the sense of maybe longer term, but the issue is Murty wouldn't leave his coaching role at Sunderland to come take the Reading job just for 8 games. He'd say, well, it has to be a permanent thing. Likewise with is McEnough a coach at the moment, or is he just doing punditry? Oh, okay. But I'd just go Noel Hunt, because you can say to him, look, if you're happy to take this and then step back to the under-23s, because you know we're looking for someone to be the permanent manager in the summer. Like, it can't just be someone given a roll of the dice, essentially.
So I guess the question is, can Paul Ince win 2 more games, 3 more games this season? I would argue probably. Yeah. Probably, possibly. Like, I understand that everybody's frustrated with how things have gone, but ultimately when I look back at the last, say, 4 or 5 games, and you look back and we've played Sheffield United, Millwall, Blackburn and Middlesbrough, I wouldn't have expected us to get more than like a point. Maybe we got a lucky win against one of them. I wouldn't have expected us to get more than 1 to 3 points anyway. So it's like, it doesn't feel like it's, points-wise, at the very least, actually that far off what we were expecting anyway. But I get that for most people at this point, it's not just about the points total. It's everything else as well. One more question, Hugh, before you jump in. Tommy Doherty has asked, who's been our least awful manager that we've had since 2013, getting relegated from the Premier League?
Least awful?
Well, I mean, none of them have been great, yeah, have they?
I mean, Stam took us to a playoff final, and I will always kind of beat the drum to say that Stam was a very good manager, and we had the behind the scenes absolutely bang on in that playoff season. Also, there was the best ever game I've seen since 2013 is that game we won 5-1 against Ipswich under Steve Clarke, where, my God, we were good that day. If anyone wants to go on YouTube the highlights of that to cheer themselves up, it's where Orlando Sarr scores the hat-trick, Ollie Norwood scores an absolute screamer, and I think Ipswich was something like 3rd or 4th at the time. We played them on a Friday night, and we absolutely hammered them. So it'd be Stam and Steve Clarke were decent enough for us.
Dan, who's the least awful? I mean, I don't think any of them have been really that good. I think you might think that Stam was good, but... Now that Stam is not in a managerial role, I'm going to suggest that perhaps he isn't that good. But who is it, Dan, for you?
Well, it's a tough question, isn't it? Because you're right, none of them have been amazing. Obviously, the playoff final with Stam, well, the build-up to the playoff final with Stam was great. That season's almost definitely the most enjoyable we've had since 2013. But that ended badly. That was probably the worst playoff final in the Championship history. I don't know if that's a fair reflection of it being Stam or just, yeah, both the two teams weren't that great. But one of my favourites, which isn't necessarily least awful, but was Barnabas.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Gomez there for a second.
No. I think because I mentioned about Ince's post-match interviews and things and how they're really grating on me at the moment. But I thought Barnabas was class after the game. I can't actually remember who we were playing, but he gave that one, and when we really needed to win, he's like, we've got to fucking win this game. And I'm like, that's exactly what I want to hear. I don't want to hear excuses. I want to hear, we're going to give everything to get 3 points this week and save this club from relegation. So, yeah, Ince, if you're listening, That win me over, mate.
Just towards the end, though, he did also say, apart from the four goals, I thought we played quite well today against QPR.
An absolute classic quote. I will not forget that anytime soon. I think my answer would probably be Steve Clark. I don't think he was particularly good, but I think, as you said, the football that we did play between August and November that season,
half-time at Fulham,
it's pretty much seared on everybody's memory, that Fulham game. Up until the Fulham game, when we just collapsed, I think we were 2-0 up, we lost 4-2 from memory. Up until then, we were really, really good. And then he went and spoke to Fulham afterwards and everything just kind of like crumbled into dust. So, yeah, good question, Tommy. Cheers. We'll be back later on today with a secondary podcast. Looking forward to this weekend's game. Looking forward might be the wrong word, but, you know, looking ahead to this weekend's game against Hull City, who arguably have been, you know, just as bad as us recently because they've only won one game in six. So make sure that you keep an eye out on your podcast feed for that. Thank you, Hugh, for joining me this lunchtime. And thank you very much, Dan, as well, for your first appearance on EPR. If you've enjoyed today's episode, go and drop us a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and a review. We always appreciate them. And we'll speak to you all very, very, very soon. Cheers.